Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, broadcasting this week from the Auto Etymology Department here at Car Talk Plaza. Auto as in automotive, I assume.
Yes, yes. I have a note here from Walt Wiebert who says, while driving home slowly in a snowstorm recently, I came up with a new word. Are you ready for this?
What, I don't look ready? I mean, trust me, I'll never be readier. I'm ready. Go ahead.
The word is subris, which he notes rhymes with hubris.
Huh.
And the definition is the excessive pride that causes owners of Subarus and other all-wheel drive cars to drive too fast when it snows.
I love it. Subarus. I mean, it's true. There you are creeping along in the right lane trying not to end up in a ditch, and a Subaru goes flying by you on the way to get a quart of milk and plasters your windshield with slush, causing you to drive off the road. It's not right.
Walt says, see also Outback, noun. The place where the tow hook should be attached when the offending Subaru driver finally does end up in the ditch.
Which you deserve. That's good. You know, there are probably other words like that that should be in our vocabulary. You know, like involve vulnerability.
Yeah, I know what that is.
Yeah, the sense of immunity to the laws of physics that middle-aged men get when driving a Volvo. I mean, they figure that since their wife is making them drive this stodgy car, they might as well drive like a nut, since nothing can happen to them, right?
Exactly.
Now, I'll bet our listeners can do even better and come up with some more of these. You know, when you think,
we can put a note on the website.
There you go. In the meantime, we'll try to solve some car problems, or at least solve a few more than we create today. We always seem to do that every week. Give us a call at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
I'm Marianne Jackson, and I'm calling from Oakland, California.
Marianne, you said?
Yeah.
Okay, Marianne. And Oakland?
Oakland, California.
I'm so delighted to be talking to you guys.
Well,
we'll see if we can do something about that. What's going on, Marianne?
I drive a 1986 Volvo 240 DL, and I've had my grill stolen twice, and I've got a couple of lights
knocked out. Oh,
yeah,
those grills are hot.
Yeah, but that's not my issue, really. I just wanted to give you guys a visual of what my car looks like.
So it's grillless.
It's grillless now. Because after it got stolen the second time, I was like, screw this. I'm not getting another one.
Yeah, you can put some chicken wire there. That might be a nice thing. No, there's a reason for the grill, which we'll get to later on if you'd like, but you may have more pressing issues.
I think it looks really great, you know, driving around without a grill, frankly.
You do, eh? All right.
Okay.
All right, so anyway, my problem is the heater. Essentially, it's oppressive. You know, I turn on the heater, and once I turn it on, even on low, it's so full blast that within 5 minutes, I'm sweaty in my car. And so it's gotten to the point where I either wear, like, hat and mittens while I drive to work, or if I do turn on the heater, I have to have the windows down. Because I'll turn it on, and then I'll even turn it back off, and it will continue to go on for hours. And I'll even, like, park my car, come back, and drive it 8 hours later, and the heater's off, and it will start up, like, powerful.
So when you turn the heater, you have, four settings for the fan on this thing, right?
Uh-huh. And I would never go above one, because that's just suicidal.
Right. But in addition to that speed selector, there is also a temperature selector.
Yeah.
Okay, which has either a red or a blue thing.
Yep.
Red is hot, blue. So does it make a difference at all whether you turn that knob?
No, not when I turn it off.
Does your air conditioning work?
No,
question. Of course it doesn't.
No.
Right, because if that worked, you'd have turned it on.
What is that air conditioning? I don't know what you're
What is that
about.
Stuff? No. So what's wrong is that the temperature control thing is not working.
Okay.
See, in other words, the fan is working like it's supposed to, 1, 2, 3, 4. And
like a champ.
Like a champ, right, except that you can't regulate the heat because the heater control valve is faulty.
Is that something expensive? Is that worthwhile trying to figure out?
Well, what do you consider expensive?
Oh,
$100? $150?
I'd spend up to $200 to have this issue fixed.
Well, it might cost you more than that if you had to hire someone to do it. So we're going to give you an alternative solution.
Okay, bring it.
Bring it.
Bring it here.
You can go to someplace like Sears, and you can buy yourself something called needle nose vice grips. You won't know what they are, but when you ask for them, they'll give them to you. You want the smallest pair you can get. And you can use that needle nose vice grips to crimp the hose coming into the heater from under the hood. So this is the $7 solution, Mary. So you can basically restrict the flow of coolant coming into the heater, which is exactly what the heater control valve does.
Uh-huh.
You'd crimp the vice grips onto one of those heater hoses, and you would adjust it. You can adjust the vice grips to get either maximum tension so that you shut off the flow of coolant completely, or you can back off a little bit and let some trickle through until you find the right setting for Oakland. And maybe when you buy the vice grips, you can go onto their website and find out what the setting is for Oakland.
So, I mean, the real issue, like, I can essentially live with this heater problem, but the major, major problem about all of this is that I have a one-eyed Boston Terrier, and he has really bad gas. And when I'm riding in the car with him and the heater is on, it literally becomes a road hazard. Like, I've had friends in my car who are dry heaving when my dog farts and my heater is on.
Boy, it's not easy. It's not easy being you, is it?
It's not. I have a very hard life.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
this
like, the
is
heater
dangerous.
I can deal with, but then once my dog comes in, see
the dog.
You didn't tell us about the dog.
Yeah, dog farts and over and heat are a bad combination.
Bad combination.
So, by the way, with this vice grip, you will be able to shut the heat off completely if you need to. So, of course, in the summer, when it gets pretty hot in Oakland in the summer,
yeah,
you can shut the heat off and you'll have no heat and no dog gas.
No dog gas. Yeah. Do you have anything, any kind of vice grip to shut off the dog gas?
Yeah, we do, but you've got to call another show for that. But try those vice grips.
Okay.
You could get a lot more elegant if you wanted to. You could put a valve in, but we'll talk about that
next
time. I like
that you're talking about elegance with my missing grill and everything.
By the way, the reason you have a grill there is so that big things don't go flying into your radiator.
Uh-huh.
Okay, in front of the radiator is your condenser, which doesn't work anymore because you don't have any air conditioning.
Hmm.
So I guess in place of the grill as your first line of defense for the radiator, you now have the air conditioner condenser. So forget it. You don't need a grill.
I don't need a grill.
You're good to go.
That's what I've been telling everybody.
Marianne, take a picture and show us where the vice grips are. I'm sure our people who visit our website would love to know how you would attack this problem.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm
and send us a picture
it.
Of the one-eyed dog, too.
Oh, I will.
From the back. See you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys. This is Jamie calling from Arkansas.
Hi, Jamie.
Jamie.
Whereabouts in Arkansas?
Little Rock.
Oh, Little Rock. Tommy's been there, right? You been to Little Rock, Arkansas?
I don't know.
Did they ask you to leave? whenever they ask him to leave a place, he blots it out of his memory.
Oh.
I've been there many times.
What's up, Jamie?
Well, I was calling because I have a 2005 Chevrolet Equinox.
Uh-huh.
And suddenly, about 4 months ago, anytime I'm turning the wheel to the right or to the left, and I usually can really hear this really well in the parking deck where I park, the car makes this terrible grinding sound. So I left it at home with my husband, and he took it to the dealer to get it fixed. And he said it was time for them to fix all the belts and the oil change and everything they needed to do. And so I went to pick it up that afternoon, and they had replaced the serpentine belt and the transmission fluid, all the stuff.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I said, well, what about that terrible sound?
Yeah.
And the guy said, well, he didn't hear it. You know, you didn't drive it, I guess.
Right. Well, it's hard to hear it if you don't drive it.
Yeah, right.
So is this when you enter your parking garage or whatever it is?
Yeah, in the parking deck.
The parking deck. I don't know exactly what that means.
But it's kind of one of those things where you have to drive around multi-layers, and you're going really slow, and it's quiet.
But sharp turns.
Right.
And you hear the noise then from where?
Right in front of me. I can make the sound.
Oh, we'd love you to make the sound.
That would be great.
You know, I hate to do that.
No, we love for you to do it.
Sure.
Come on.
Okay, here it goes. Yeah. Ready? Okay. What is that?
I thought that was my brother clearing his throat.
And you hear that as you're turning the steering wheel?
Either way, yeah.
Either way. But what if you're going straight ahead and not turning?
I don't hear it.
Well, that's good, because most of the time, you know, you're pretty much going straight.
I am, yeah.
So forget it.
If you were to do this, and maybe you have, if you were to turn it slightly to the right, or at least enough to get the noise, and then you were to turn it back to the left, so the vehicle were going straight, the noise would disappear.
Right.
And then if you turn a little bit to the left now, maybe that the same amount that you had turned to the right.
Any amount.
Any amount.
Any amount.
It comes back.
Right.
Really?
Now, I know y'all know exactly what it is.
No,
right?
we don't know exactly what it is, but we're going to give you one heck of a guess, Jamie. I mean, it sounds to me like you have a bad power steering pump.
A bad power steering pump.
And because the only time the power steering pump really comes into play, of course, is when
you turn the wheel.
When you turn the wheel. And I have a feeling that your vehicle may have electric power steering. And that is that it has a pump, but the pump is mounted right on top of the rack and pinion.
Okay.
So that, you know, traditionally the pump is mounted on the engine and it's driven by a belt, so that the entire time the engine is running, whether you need it or not, this pump is pumping fluid around it. It's a terrible waste of energy. So I'm pretty sure in your vehicle they may have this might even be a transition year for the Equinox that they used it the first as an 05, right?
It's an 05,
Yeah, I think this may be the first year that they use this, that in fact the pump is actually mounted on the rack and pinion.
Okay.
But it's an electric pump. And I think that might be the problem. The noise is coming from that pump.
Okay.
There may not be much of anything they can do about it. You know, if it's making noise, you might have to just wait until it breaks.
But when it breaks, well, what will happen with my steering?
You won't have any.
Well, okay.
Yeah. Don't get used to it.
Right. In fact, if I were you, I'd start going to the gym. Get those arms really strong.
Yeah.
Now, you will have steering, but you won't. If it did break catastrophically, you wouldn't have power steering anymore.
Okay.
But like all cars that have power steering, the fail-safe is that you revert to conventional steering, but it's just much harder to steer.
Okay.
You know, so you wouldn't lose your steering. And in fact, if you did lose it when you were on the highway, you wouldn't even know it when you tried to pull in.
Only when you slowed down.
When you slowed down, you wouldn't. Yeah, you'd say, oh, my God. But they should certainly look at that. I mean, if there's something wrong with that pump, there may be a campaign on it, or there may be a recall, or there may be something they can do for you, or at least reassure you that that's what it is and it's nothing to worry about.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, good luck.
Okay, thank you so much.
See you, Jamie. Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Chris from Canterbury, New Hampshire.
Hey, Chris, what's going on?
Not a mucho. I kind of have a zen or philosophy of car driving question.
Really?
Yeah.
I've recently acquired a 2004 Ford Crown Victoria Police Interceptor.
Oh.
And I commute from Canterbury down to Boston every day.
Okay.
I acquired it for relatively little money, but it has drastically increased my commute time, because in the backwoods of New Hampshire, before I get to 93, I pull up behind someone.
They slow right down.
Yes, sir.
Right.
But my question is there anything I can do short of putting like some sort of pink fuzzy dice on the car to mitigate the fact that this is you know, an unmarked cop car, but I have no authority to give anyone a ticket.
No, you know what you need to get? I bought one of these for my own car, and I've had more fun with this than you could ever imagine. I can't even remember the name of the company that sells it, but if you go online, you'll find many a vendor of this. I bought a funny horn for my car. It's a device that has all kinds of farm animal sounds. So I have a crowing rooster. I can play the Mexican hat dance. I have a neighing horse. I have a mooing cow. So you can get behind someone and you can go, mmm. And that, right away, that'll let them know that you're not the real deal, and they'll speed up and be on their way, especially when they realize that there's some nut job behind.
Who thinks he's a cow?
I may have to try that, because it's added about a half an hour to my commute time when people go from 65 down to 35 or 40 on the back roads.
Do you still have the push bars on the front like it came?
No. I took the push bar off, and I took off the little light that was on the side. And
oh, that light's the coolest thing.
I know, but I figured that was the problem.
Right, I know you had to take that off. And is it still painted black and white?
No, it was a sheriff's car, so it's like a teal, not a teal, but like an olive green.
All right, you know what? Then I see pink in your future.
Pink in my future.
Yeah, I think you got to paint it an outlandish color. You got to paint it like gas company orange. or something like that. I mean, there are lots of Crown Vics on the road that aren't, you know, that aren't police cars and don't look it. You know,
right.
So you've got to make yours not look it. But painting the car runs into money. You don't want to do that.
Well, considering I spent only a couple of grand on it just for a commuter car, taxi cab yellow is kind of out of the question for me.
Here's what you do. Take the grill off, break a headlight, and have something dangling off so it looks like a jalopy, and everyone will just know that you're not seriously a cop, and they'll just ignore you.
Short of cracking the windshield, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, and definitely hang some fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror.
Very good.
Good luck.
Thank you much.
See you, Chris.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, look, before we take a break, I need to remind everybody that in just a few minutes, we're going to answer last week's puzzler.
Last week's puzzler?
Do you happen to remember it?
I do. Not. Unfortunately, I do not.
All right, I'll give you a few hints.
All right.
Here they are.
Yeah.
Old lady.
Yeah.
Lincoln Town Car.
Yeah.
New Hampshire. Mother-in-law. Wheel of camembert cheese.
You made that up.
I made up the cheese thing. But the rest really are hints, and we'll have the whole story in just a minute.
Push that throttle, grip that wheel. 18 tons, diesel and steel. Up before dawn, chasing the sun. One last pickup, one more run. And all 18 are turning in perfect time. For 500 miles, you've been on my mind. Carry me home. Carry me.
And even those snowmen checked the Weather Channel hoping for a merciful warm spell, whatever they hear us say it. This is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a prison warden and need to send inmates running back to their cells.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, of course, maybe sometimes, yeah. Car repair sometimes, mm-hmm. And the answer to last week's puzzler, and here it is, it's a true story.
But an old lady and a Lincoln Town Car and a wheel of camembert cheese
wheel.
Yeah.
I'll do it quickly because this is rather lengthy. A few weeks ago, an elderly woman came into the garage with her elderly Lincoln Town Car. I think it was like an 85 or something. And she's talking to Manny, the youngest of our technicians. She says, there are two things that need to be looked at. One is I need a tune-up. Now, I've instructed all the guys over the years, when anyone asks for anything, to ask why. So he says, what makes you think you need a tune-up? She says, well, my mileage has been off. The engine seems to be laboring. The power's diminished. So I know I need a tune-up. He says, okay, what's the other thing? She says, well, my shift indicator is off. You know, when I put the thing in park, it says I'm in reverse. And when I'm in drive, it says I'm really in two. And he says, I know what's wrong with your car. You're driving in the wrong gear.
Mm.
Right? You're driving around in second gear, and that's why your mileage is off and the engine sounds
like
funny.
Like it's laboring, it's revving too high.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Sure.
She says, au contraire, piston puss.
Shut up.
Whole country, young piston pussy.
Yeah.
She says, I can feel all the shifts. As I start driving, I can feel it shift from first to second. I shift from second to third. If I stomp on the gas, it downshifts. And he says, oh, okay, back to square one.
Yeah.
How do you know your mileage is off? And she says, well, I check it all the time. Every month I take a trip to visit my mother-in-law in New Hampshire. And I noticed on my most recent return trip, the car seemed to be laboring and my mileage was terrible for the whole return trip. Plus, I noticed all these other symptoms. He asks her a bunch of other questions, and then he says, whereabouts in New Hampshire does your mother-in-law live?
Wow.
She says,
What an interrogation technique the kid's got.
Well, he had to tie her up for the second part of this. She says, North Crunchy Granolaville. And he asks, by any chance does she live on a dirt road? She says, as a matter of fact, she does. And it's a lousy dirt road at that, full of potholes, and I hate driving on it. He says, I know what's wrong with your car.
Wow.
I don't think you need a tune-up. And I think one repair is going to fix everything. The drop in mileage, the laboring, the poor performance. And what did he learn from that question that enabled him to figure out what was wrong with her car?
I have no idea.
Well, the hint was that the gear shift thing was off.
That's a weird... It's weird.
It was weird, and but it's a true story.
Would I ever doubt that you would tell us something that wasn't true?
Every week. Whilst she was driving on that dirt road,
yeah,
because of the age of her car, something broke. And that something that broke caused her gear shift indicator to be off, also caused her drop in mileage and her drop in performance. And what broke was the mount that holds the transmission up. And when the transmission broke, the transmission crossmember broke.
Yeah.
It sat down on the emergency brake cable.
Oh,
her emergency brake was on.
God.
Enough to make her mileage drop off, the power drop off. And, of course, because the transmission now was closer to the ground, the shift indicator was off. So fixing this one thing.
Man.
And Manny figured it out by himself.
And, you gave him a raise.
Race.
No. A pat on the back? No.
No.
Said, good job!
He got a lunch hour that day. Who's our winner, Tommy?
Wow, that was one of the world's great puzzlers.
Well,
that one.
Length,
wow.
Well, the length. How was it for length?
It was very long. Just like John Wayne, he's very tall. And the winner is Margaret Lowe from Minot, North Dakota. And for having her answer selected at random from among the thousands of correct answers that we may have gotten this week, our pal Margaret Lowe.
Isn't it
from Minot?
Mino?
No, it's Minot.
Well, I know they pronounce it Minot, but isn't it Mino?
They pronounce it Minot.
Mino.
That's how I pronounce. Well, a lot of French people live in North Dakota.
Yeah.
So it could be Mino.
Those fur trappers, they're still up there,
but
right?
Maybe the North Dakotans don't like French, and they're just trying to get them ticked off, and they pronounce it Minot.
I love it.
And if they do that, they're going, nah, 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 nah. That's how we're going to pronounce it, and the hell with you. But anyway, Margaret Lowe from Minot, North Dakota, is going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Car Talk Shameless Commerce Division, where Robert Siegel will personally wrap and ship your T-shirt for you if you ask really nicely, fat chance.
Anyway, we will have a brand new puzzler coming up in the third half of today's show, almost as lengthy as this one. Yeah,
lengthy.
I decided.
Good.
Well, I came to a realization the other day. Quality is out. I can't do quality anymore.
It just
doesn't happen. So I'm going for distance.
Yeah, well, distance is good because it's even more interesting because the longer it is, the more obfuscation opportunity.
And the more people nod off.
Of course. Yeah, they just give up and say, who cares about the stupid puzzle so the way shifter doesn't work.
Anyway, if you'd like to call us, the number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hey, guys. It's Zach calling from Pittsburgh.
Hey, Zach. What's going on?
I have a 1999 Saab 9.5 wagon. It's a sport wagon.
Yeah.
I love this car so much.
Yeah, it's a nice car.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great, except I am on my fourth radiator in a year.
Oh, in a year?
Yeah, and what happens is I'll be driving for a while, highway speed, 65, 70 miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
And then I get into stop-and-go traffic, and my first indicator that the radiator is going to blow is that the oil light will come on when I decelerate. So the oil light kind of flickers on slowly, and then I get the chime. And then suddenly there's a tss and there's steam flowing out of the radiator, and I have to call AAA again.
And when the radiator blows, where does it blow? Is it the same spot every time?
Yeah, I take it to a mechanic who I'm kind of becoming friends with, actually.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because of this car. And he knows Saabs really well. That's what he does. He can't figure it out. He has no idea what's going on. But he said it's always one of the, I think it's a hard plastic tank somewhere in there.
Yeah, the tank is the seam where the tank is affixed to the core.
Right.
Okay, the core is made out of aluminum and the tanks are plastic.
Right.
So has anyone ever ascertained why the oil light is coming on?
No. Don said it could have been one of two things, and he said typically, I don't remember exactly what it was, but he did a relatively inexpensive fix on it that wasn't a what he calls an El Cheapo fix.
Did it involve green bananas?
Exactly.
Yeah, he did bring that up, didn't he?
Well, when you first started mentioning this and the fact that your guy couldn't figure it out, the first thing that came to mind, and we've had cars that have blown several radiators, it's almost always a failed head gasket or a crack in the block or the cylinder head. And what happens in those situations is you allow the exhaust gas pressures, which are, you know, can be thousands of PSI, to get into your cooling system. And more often than not, it will blow off the one weakest link in the entire cooling system.
Right.
The tank is basically held on to the core by just bending over a bunch of metal tabs.
Right.
So what happens is it creates enough pressure to unbend those metal tabs and the tank flies off.
Right.
You know, so it's possible that you've got a blown head gasket. And the way he's going to find this out is by checking for the presence of exhaust gases in the coolant.
What's a fix like that typically run?
Yeah, it typically runs about $25,000 for a new car. Well, I mean, it taking the head off and you know, renewing the gasket and or the head is probably going to be over $1,000 and up.
Okay.
See, I love Saab owners.
Yeah.
Because Saab owners,
they don't care.
They don't get panicked. You say $2,500, say, oh, great.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you think it's worth hanging on to?
He didn't even balk at $25,000. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said, do you think it's worth hanging on to the Speedwagon, or should I look for something else?
Well, you know, if it's going to be a couple of $1,000, you're right on the cusp of doing something nuts.
Right.
Because it is 10 years old. How many miles on it? I never asked.
When I got it from the auction 3 years ago, it had 60, and I've got it up to 103.
Well, that's not a lot. I mean, there's a very good chance. And I'll tell you, all of these cars are great until you get to like 90,000 miles.
Exactly.
You know, really, whether it's a BMW or an Audi, a Saab, Volvo, you get to 80, 90,000, and you got to be prepared to spend $5,000.
Right.
And how much have you spent so far?
Well, we got a warranty, an aftermarket warranty when we got the car, and the first radiator cost me $1,000, and Don has put the other ones in for free under those warranties, and he's comped his work. So,
yeah, you're about to bankrupt that radiator company, so one more radiator, I think, they're going to be goners. Yeah, they'll be
exactly.
Filing Chapter 11. So have them do the head gasket test, and you may find out what it is, and you can put an end to the speculation.
Okay.
Good luck, Zach.
Thank you so much, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on Car Talk.
Hey, this is Sally from Indianapolis.
Hey, Sally. What's happening?
Well, hey, it's cold in Indianapolis, as I'm sure it's cold there,
too. Of course it is.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, the problem that we've got is we'll get some snow, and then my black car will get covered with salt and, you know, everything from the road.
Yeah.
And then it'll be really cold out, like 10, 12 degrees. And my husband, who's very smart, has always told me, don't wash your car when it's really, really cold out because the water can get in the seams of the body panels and freeze and expand and ruin the panels of your car. So we always wait until the weather gets a little warmer, at least above freezing, so then at least we can drive it home and put it in the garage. But we see all these people lined up at the car wash, getting their cars washed when it's so cold out. And we're just wondering if we're worrying too much, if we can go ahead and wash the car, or if we're the smart ones that are walking around with cars covered with white salt from the road.
Jeez.
Well, the ideal thing would be to get the car washed in a warm place and leave it in the warm place.
Yeah, like Arizona.
No, I was thinking of a place that was heated, and then you leave it there for a couple of hours, and then you're all set.
And you know, way to take it, the dealership. They'll wash the car for you.
And leave it inside.
Leave it inside.
Oh, and then I sit in their dealer waiting room and read magazines
exactly.
While I wait.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you tell them not to put it outside.
And that car wash will only cost you about $600 while they do the recommended service. Well, I'll tell you, the advantage of getting the salt off your car, I think, far outweighs any risk of having body panels swelled up by freezing water or, you know, water turning to ice and jamming a lock or a window mechanism and all that. I think it's important in the winter to wash your car.
Okay.
And especially to wash the undercarriage if it's a car you're planning to keep.
Sure.
You know, and in Indianapolis, I'm sure they put plenty of salt on the roads.
Oh, yeah.
Just like they do around here.
Yeah.
And it's important to get that salt off. Now, a lot of the car washes have been converting to high-pressure air to dry the cars.
Yeah.
So nothing ever touches the car. Now, my brother says, yeah, he hasn't been to a car wash since 1955.
No, but I've driven by them. I've seen what they do.
And what they do is they blow very high-pressure air at your car. In fact, it feels like you're in a hurricane.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that blows a lot of the water that would cause problems away.
Okay.
You know, so I would say clean your car, go to the car wash, and plus, black cars, by the way, are the ones that show the dirt the most. Isn't that kind of counterintuitive?
I know.
Mm. Yeah, you'll never get another one of them, will you?
I love my car, but yeah, the black, yeah. Maybe go silver next year, and then it won't show up.
My next car is going to be the color of dirt.
Great idea.
Good luck.
Thanks, guys.
Good luck, Sally.
See you, Sally. Bye-bye. Yeah, Tommy's is, it didn't start out that way, but his is the color of dirt. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, how are you guys today?
Not bad. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. My name is Brian. I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia.
Hey, Brian.
I drive a 98 Volvo, an S70 low-pressure turbo.
Uh-huh.
It's got 167,000 miles on it. I put about 60,000 of them on in the last year. The car is great. I bought it for $1,000 last year. I drive it back and forth between New York and Richmond almost on a weekly basis. My problem or my concern is occasionally when I first turn the car on, I turn it on, starts right up, and then it makes this noise, which I'm going to make for you.
Yeah.
For like 4 minutes. It just doesn't stop. I don't know why. And then after about maybe a half mile or a mile, it stops. I can't get it to repeat itself whenever I bring it over or have left it over at my buddy who's a mechanic. And then sometimes it'll do it when I stop. The temperature is running fine. I get the oil changed every 3,000 miles. I just don't know what it is.
Well, and you've never had the opportunity to jump out of the car and throw up the hood and stick your head in there?
Yeah, I look, but I can't. I don't. There's so much going on under there.
There really is.
Yeah.
I just don't know. I mean, I started working on a 64 Ford Anglia when I was 12. That was easy. I could pull the thing out with my dad. Now I open the hood on this Volvo. I don't know. It looks like a spaceship.
Yeah, think how we feel. Hey, we're not that smart. Well, it sounds like a classic case of a belt that's screeching.
Oh, okay.
You know, it could be as simple as that, or it could be the belt tensioner that's faulty, you know. But more likely than not, it's just the belt that's screeching because it's slipping on the pulleys. Get a spray bottle with water in it.
Okay.
And start the thing up. So when it's screeching like this, try to spray the belt.
Oh.
If you spray that belt and you can get it to change, get the noise to change, I think you'll have determined that it's the belt and or the tensioner that's at fault.
Oh, okay.
You might even be able to get the noise to go away.
Oh,
you know, if you wanted to go away, you'd have to spray it with oil. That would make it go away, but I don't think that would be a good idea. The other possibility is that it might be something more serious. And if in fact, spraying the belt with water doesn't give any information, it's possible it's your timing belt tensioner.
Okay.
Or the idler pulley in there. And those could make that same kind of noise that would go away after a while. But if either one of them fails, it's goodbye engine.
Oh,
you
wow.
know, so try to find out if it's the regular belt. Change the belt. If the noise goes away, you're all set. You won't have to call us again.
I will absolutely do that.
All right.
I appreciate it. Hey, love the show, guys.
See you, Brian. Thanks for calling.
All right. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Look, before we get to this week's new puzzler, we have to take a short break.
Actually, I got a funny note here from somebody named Jonathan Perry. You know the stick shift feature we did?
Yeah. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, we told our listeners about an article that we wrote for the website about how you can learn or teach the art of driving a stick shift.
That's right.
And we said it's a good skill to have, and you never know. You never know when it might come in handy.
Well, beep, 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 Dateline, Philadelphia, January 9th. In an ill-conceived caper, several men abandoned a FedEx van downtown minutes after they had hijacked it.
Yeah.
Their plan apparently did not include an accomplice who could drive a manual transmission.
You think they would have thought about that Well, you see that? There you go. I mean, all you up-and-coming crooks out there, before you get involved in any capers, be sure to go to our website and learn how to drive a stick shift. Jeez! Well, look, after the break, I'm going to have a puzzler, a new puzzler, and it's from my Painting by Numbers series.
Your Painting by Numbers series?
Yes, indeed. And wow, we'll take more car questions, too, right after we take a short break.
So please stay tuned.
It's a terrible drive when the clock strikes five. I'm a coming to a traffic jam ahead. Getting madder by the minute while I'm sitting right in it. A traffic light that's always turned red. I'm honking my horn, cussing up a storm, cause you cut me off and passed me on the right. And you better not linger, cause you're giving me the finger. So when we stop, we'll be a fight. I'm in a road rage, I'm a rampage. Yeah, my neck's turning red and my foot's getting heavy on the gas. It's the last stage of an outrage. I'm a half a foot behind you, so you better turn your wheel and let me pass.
And even though the network president sends us another heart-shaped box of X-Lax chocolates whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and, of course, the new Puzzler.
Mm.
Which I did say was from my, what, Painting by Numbers series?
You, well, you did say that, you know. Yes.
All right, pay attention because it's long and you could nod off. This was sent in by someone named John Calhoun, I believe. You ready?
Yeah.
I have a friend who's a mostly out-of-work house painter. One day he stopped at a red light with his truck, you know, with the ladders on top and all that jazz, you know. Mm-hmm. And he hears a toot from the vehicle stop next to him. The fellow motions to him to roll down his window and then asks the painter if he's looking for work. You bet I am. Do you have a business card? Asks the prospective customer. He fumbles around for one like everyone does that doesn't have a business card, right? And finally admits, no, I don't have one. And the painter says, tell me your number. I'll remember it and I'll give you a call tomorrow. The fellow in the other vehicle starts to rattle off the number. Same area code as me, says the painter to himself. I won't have any trouble remembering that. Next comes the three-digit exchange. Huh, same as mine.
Huh.
All I have to remember then is the last four digits. Piece of cake. The light turns green, and even though their accelerating engines are making a lot of noise, they can't drown out those last four digits. He's got them. And upon hearing them, he thinks, boy, this is my lucky day. One of those digits is his son's age. Okay?
Yeah.
The next one, his daughter's age. A third one is the number of months he's behind on his boat payments. And the fourth one is the number of nights his wife has made him sleep on the sofa. He's a snorer, I guess. Now, he really needs the work. He needs to remember this number. And it's then that he realizes that that four-digit number, you ready for this,
yeah,
is divisible by three. He
uh-huh.
says, great. I'll remember the number and I'll call this guy first thing in the morning. Well, 3 days later, he realizes that he forgot to make the phone call. So he sits down with a paper and a pencil so he can write down the number. He knows the area code. It's the same as his, right?
Mm-hmm.
He knows the next three digits. They're the same as his. He thinks, probably a neighbor. I'll be able to come home for lunch, maybe catch a nap. Now, those last four digits, let me see, says. One of them is the number of nights I've spent on the sofa. That's easy. Oh, yeah, and then this is my boat payment default status. I got that. My daughter's age and my son's age. He's got the four digits. He writes them down, and he's got the four numbers, right?
Yeah.
And then he remembers that the four-digit number he just reconstructed is divisible by three. He does it. He divides it by three. He says, Eureka.
Yeah.
I got the number. He makes the call. It's the wrong number. It's a retired proctologist who told him what to do with his paintbrush. Anyway, something went terribly wrong. What was it and why? Now, if you think you know the answer, it's not as simple as you think, perhaps. If you think you know the answer, write it on the sleeve of a Gerbing microwire heated jacket. Heated jacket with patented micro-sized heating fibers, rugged 330 Denier Cordura fabric, waterproof zippered pockets, and two pocket-sized fire extinguishers, just in case, and send it to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Matt 02238.
Or you can email us your answer from cartalk.com.
If you have a question about your car, please give us a call. We're at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Rosie, and I'm calling from San Diego.
What's your name?
Rosie.
Oh, Rosie. Hi, Rosie.
Rosie.
From San Diego. Wonderful, warm San Diego.
Yeah, it's lovely and sunny here right now.
Yeah,
good.
We know. We
don't want to hear about it, all right?
We watch the weather we watch the Weather Channel, too. So what's going on, Rosie?
Well, my boyfriend drives a 1998 Toyota RAV4, and I drive it occasionally.
Okay.
It's a manual transmission, and it has a parking brake, which is operated by hand. Whenever he pulls up the parking brake to park the car, you know there's that little button on the end of it?
Sure.
He never depresses that button when he pulls it up, and it always goes... And I always tell him that he's wearing out the ratchet on the parking brake. And he says that's absolute nonsense, and the car's fine, he's had it 10 years, and the brake still works. But the other day, we were, like, parking up in front of a friend's house. We were dropping some friends off, and they happened to live on a hill. And so he parked up, he pulled on the handbrake, and our friends got out and went round the back to get their suitcases out of the trunk, and the car starts rolling backwards into them.
Aha! Uh-huh.
And I tell him it's because he's ruined the handbrake because he never pisses the button down when he pulls the brake up. So I want to know who's right.
Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy.
Mm. Well, we got to tell the truth.
Yeah, I mean, so when he pulls on the handle, if he were to push the button in, he wouldn't hear that click, 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 click sound as he went up one
right
notch at a time on the ratchet.
Mm-hmm.
Is he hurting the ratchet? Probably not. Probably not. I hate to disappoint you. I know.
He's going to love this.
I know he is going to love
is,
it.
Yeah.
Well, we guys have to stick together. We've been taking a beating lately. Well, I mean, the truth be known, if he did break the ratchet, okay, then the handbrake wouldn't hold. So what happened when it failed? You say it started to roll backwards, but was it because the handle wouldn't stay in the up position? Did the handle flop down? Because if that's the case... No.
I don't think it did. Maybe he just didn't pull it hard enough.
He made yeah, and one way to know if you pulled it hard enough is to count those clicks. I always do that. Click, click, click. 6 clicks, that's enough.
I see.
You know, and you also always should test it to make sure the car doesn't roll after you set the parking brake. And it's possible that maybe the cables have stretched, or maybe he didn't pull it hard enough, or something's wrong with one of the emergency brakes.
Okay.
You know, so I wouldn't, you know.
It's unlikely, however, that he wrecked the ratchet.
Oh, no. So he's allowed to do that, then?
Yeah, he's going to be allowed to. So anything else you want to nag him about while you got us here?
What else did he do?
Talk. I'll save that for later.
Yeah.
All right. So he doesn't do anything else that's too bad, eh?
No, nothing.
All right. Well, then let him off the hook. Give him a break.
Okay,
See you, Rosie.
Bye.
888 Car Talk. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Clay. I'm calling from Mercer Island, Washington.
Hey, Clay, what's going on? Hmm.
Well, we spent the last year building a house and have a work truck that we've been using, affectionately known as Earl. And Earl's windshield wiper stopped working. And I've taken to carrying a towel in the truck and swinging my arm out the window and wiping the windshield.
What? Yeah, as long as it's not raining a lot.
Yeah, and you know where I live, it never rains.
No, we heard that. So when you say we are building a house, who's we?
My wife and I.
And how old is Earl?
Earl is a 1994 Ford F-250.
Okay.
And he's got a few miles on the clock, about 246,000.
Yeah, and judging from where you live, he's probably got that many miles on the wiper motor, too.
Yeah, it's likely.
Yeah. So does it work on any speed?
No, so it used to work periodically. Like, I'd turn the switch on, and then sometimes the wipers would work. It was kind of like magic wipers.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
And now when I turn the switch on, I hear kind of a clicking sound on the right side of the dash.
Oh,
and we used to be able to hit the dash, and occasionally they'd work.
Well, you know, that is the time-honored method.
It's one I've used many times.
Can you look at the two pivots where the wipers attach?
Yes.
Okay. Can you move those by hand now?
No, because I thought that the motor might be seized or something, so I turned it on and tried to help start the windshield wipers.
And you couldn't move it?
No.
And you can see the motor. The motor is mounted to the firewall.
I didn't see it when I looked in there, but it might be in there.
Yeah, it's under the hood,
I
believe. And although it may be under the cowl, but you have wiper arms attached to those two pivots. Mm-hmm. Those two pivots are attached to what's called the wiper linkage. and one end of that linkage is attached to the motor.
Okay.
So the motor can't be too far away. I mean, it's not like in the back seat.
Okay.
You know, so the motor is right there attached to that linkage, and I'm guessing the motor is done for.
So all you have to do is find it and replace it.
And
okay.
And what you're going to do, and do you have something like a test light?
I used to.
You used to. It's probably in the concrete of the foundation of the house now. Well, not to worry. I'm pretty confident that you need a wiper motor.
Okay.
I mean, there's a possibility that the motor is bound up and can't turn because you have a seized linkage. But that's a lot less likely.
Okay.
What you can do, when you find the motor, you can disconnect the linkage from it and then see if, in fact, you then should be able to move the wipers freely back and forth across the window.
Oh, okay.
If you can do that, you can get some really long shoelaces.
Well, the towel's been working, yeah. Sort of.
All the shoelaces are great. Just imagine this, Clay. You attach
big shoelaces.
Big, long ones. You attach one shoelace to the driver's side wiper.
All right.
Okay, and you run that shoelace inside the thing, basically in front of your chest, and attach the other end to the passenger side wiper.
This could work better. The towel tends to sort of flap around when we're on the freeway, and I'm trying to hit the windshield.
It.
So by pulling, you, and especially if your wife is in the car, she okay, pull. Okay, now you pull. And you would basically be doing, you'd be replicating what the motor does.
Okay.
Yeah, won't that be fun?
But
I think I'll go for the new motor.
Yeah. You could go to a recycling yard, you know, what we used to call junkyards, and you can buy one of these probably for $20.
Okay.
And put it in.
Put it in yourself.
Yeah, take a break from working on the house. By the way, what kind of a house are you building? You're doing something that's unusual?
We built a craftsman home. We lived here and tore down the house and then rebuilt a new house.
So where did you live while you were doing this house?
Three or four different apartments.
Oh, so you didn't prevail upon friends and family?
Well, we looked at the cost of a divorce and decided that if it was cheaper to rent apartments than it was to prevail on friends and family.
Yeah, and you guys are smart to not have moved in with relatives because that would have been a disaster.
It can be trouble.
Yeah, good for you.
All right.
Well, the world's going to be a lot easier to see when you get that new wiper motor. Good luck, Clay.
Great, thank you.
Right, bye-bye.
Bye.
888-CAR-TALK, that's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, it's Mary calling from St. Louis.
Hi, Mary. Hi, from Mary. St. Louis. What's going on?
I have a 04 Toyota Sienna minivan that I affectionately call the Blue Beast, hauling around kids and dogs and those good things. One of my kids was curious and decided to figure out whether a piece of bark would open the lock on the driver's side door.
And did it work?
And you guessed it. The bark broke off in the keyhole.
Of course.
So now I can't insert the key in the keyhole. I can open it remotely, which is good, or from the passenger door. So I can use the door, but I would...
How old is this kid?
At the time, he was 6.
Oh.
Very curious.
Is he in reform school now, or is he still living in the old roof?
No, he's a great kid, but he's still curious.
You know what? You certainly wouldn't want to do anything to stifle that curiosity.
Absolutely.
So what's he been
not.
Up to lately? Is it anything like this?
No, his curiosity hasn't caused me any more troubles.
Good. No, I think it's important when you have kids that are curious like this that you don't do anything to discourage them.
So can I use a blowtorch
no.
to reduce the bark to ash?
I wouldn't use a blowtorch.
But it's not a bad idea, you got to admit.
Blowtorch?
It's dangerous.
No, I don't think I'd use flames, but you know what you could use?
Yeah. What?
You could use a heat gun.
Oh.
Yeah.
You could use a heat gun. A heat gun is something like a super-duper hairdryer.
Okay.
But it throws out a lot more heat.
Okay.
But you have to protect the surrounding area, which is painted.
Right, and I'm not as concerned about the paint as I am just about the safety of doing whatever it is I'm going to try.
Can you see any of this bark sticking out?
No.
All right. Well, there are various chemicals on the market. I know of one. I don't know the name of it. I'm sure one of our listeners will be quick to give us the name. That is designed to it's a stump remover.
Okay. Yeah.
And it's used to break down wood fibers.
Okay.
You know, that might be a little safer to get that in there. It might require tipping the vehicle over on its side, but...
but you have to admit, there is some certain kind of idea that people want to just blow it away.
Well, yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, no, I have no doubt that the blowtorch would work.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but I think
it would be so much fun.
And it would be
exactly.
It would be so much fun, but you'd be ticked off if you had to have the door repainted for $400.
You're right. Although I would probably just drive around with it like it was.
Of course.
Because you know you could. I hate to mention this, but you could take the thing to a repair shop. They could pop the lock out.
Yeah.
Okay, and they could probably, with the lock in hand, remove the wood.
And how much would it cost?
Well, less than painting a door.
Okay.
But I would try the thing. I think the stuff is called stump out.
I'll try the stump out first, because I always like to try to solve my own problems.
Yeah, try the stump out. And you want to use a syringe would be great, you know. If you
sure.
could get a syringe and squirt some of that stuff in there. I would try putting some of this stump out on an inconspicuous area first to see if it degrades the paint.
Okay.
But just to be on the safe side, I would make sure that you masked off that area so that any of this stump out that got on the door would actually not get on the paint, but rather the tape.
Okay.
All right, and try it out. I'm sure if you go to our website, we'll have had, by the time you hang up the phone, 20 people that have submitted remedies for just this thing. And by the way, your kid is not the only one that's ever stuck a piece of tree bark into a lock. My brother did it on his Fiat 2 weeks ago. Good luck.
And it's still
there. Thank you so much, guys.
Bye-bye. Well, it's happened again. You frittered away another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin the Barbarian and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the County Clare, Trout Meunier, Flambéed Pear, Sirloin Rare, Pomme de Terre, Spit Roast Bear, Haricot Vert, Angel Hair with Fresh Gruyere, Truth or Dare, Salmonella Scare is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Marge Novera. Our customer care representative is Heywood Jabuzoff. Our PR specialist is Hugh Lion Sack, assisted by Lauda B. Essen. Our sensitive language advisor is Holly Schmidt. Our cliche monitor is Saul Wellengood. Our optometric firm is CFI Care. Guest accommodations are provided by the Horseshoe Road Inn. The head of our working mother support group is Erasmus B. Dragon. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the storm drain Argonauts in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and please don't drive like my brother.
And please don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1006, tiptoe through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, you can sign up for your own make-model discussion area.
Yeah, so if you have, say, an 06 Honda Accord, you can choose to see only those comments that are about 06 Honda Accords.
Right, and you can be alerted daily or weekly when there's a new posting about your specific car.
Yeah, it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, and it saves me from having to scroll through thousands of useless posts about cars built after 1953.
Yeah. Well, check out your own make-model-specific discussion area.
It's called My Car Talk, and you can get there all week from the homepage of cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though modern composers complain about the horrible dissonance, whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.